Broadcasting from the beautiful campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio. Well, it's back. The 41st Homecoming Festival in the city of Dearborn will return after a two-year hiatus. It's taking place this year at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, August 5th, 6th, and 7th. Festival hours are noon to 11 each day. And if you'd like some more information, go to this website, Dearborn Homecoming. .com. That's DearbornHomecoming.com. Senior Fest will return. Reunion tents will return. 2 days of fireworks, musical performances, the carnival, vendors, nonprofits. It's everything you love about homecoming and more. The 2022 Homecoming Festival at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Check out this website for more information. DearbornHomecoming.com. WHFR's broadcast booth will be there. Stop by and say hello. We'll see you at homecoming. Coming.
Thank you.
The Stately Allemande. Historically, supposedly, a dance that represented German style of dancing. That was from the Capriccio No. 3 in F by Jan Zelenka. The Bach Sinfonia played that. They were led by Daniel Abraham. Coming up, some dancing music, including a totally different rag. Welcome to Friday. I'm glad you could make it. I'm Lynn Warfel. This is music of the Yao people, or supposed to represent the Yao people of China, who live in the southern part of China. This is music by Liu Tishan, the Yao dance performed by the Shanghai Quartet.
This is WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 FM, online at WHFR.fm. My name's Alan Mazurek. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. Another type of way of doing the WHFR Journal. Today on our program, hopefully, Susan McGraw, can you hear me? Susan McGraw is at homecoming in Dearborn.
Hi, Alan. Yes, I can hear you loud and clear here from the WHFR broadcast booth at Dearborn Homecoming Festival. We are celebrating an amazing resurgence of this festival, and we look forward to talking about it with our listeners.
Indeed, and I can confirm that you are on the air as we talk right now, just so you know.
Yay.
and this really is an interesting one. This is the first time we've had a live in-person homecoming since the year 2019, and we had a couple of virtual ones in 2020 and 2021 because of the COVID pandemic, but this was an opportunity for the city to completely reimagine and redesign what homecoming is and what it means. And I suppose we have to sort of start from there. We always think Dearborn homecoming, I guess I have to, you know, get myself down to Ford Field, but that's really not going to work out that well this time, is it?
Not this time, no. We are excited to be broadcasting from the new location at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center here, just off of Michigan Avenue and Greenfield. It's a beautiful, sprawling area to have a festival of this magnitude. So we're very excited to see all of the planning and all of the coordination that has gone into the being ready for this event on behalf of the city and the homecoming committee and everybody that worked really hard to make this possible. Well, now we're in sort of the execution stage or the playing it out phase, and so far so good.
Good. Yep. So I was going to say, it's a nice day outside. I'm here in the WHFR studios, and it's not raining in here. What's it like out there today?
We are, I'm going to call it partly cloudy so far, and we did see the sun a little bit here and there. Wish there was a little more of a breeze, yes, that could impact all of our flyers going shoo down the field, but I think a little bit of a breeze is going to go a long way, so we're hoping that the wind picks up just a touch. I think there's a chance for some scattered showers quickly rolling through in like the 3 o'clock time frame, but then after that, it's smooth sailing, as I understand it, for the rest of the weekend.
So here we are, Friday afternoon, obviously the first of 3 days. So the festival is officially open. I know that, in years past, and I know they're doing it again, the All-Stars segment of the festival has been taking place so far this morning, and then obviously open to the broader public this afternoon. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. The festival itself officially opened at noon for everybody, and my understanding is the All-Star event took place earlier this morning. It's so exciting that we're also in the midst of Elder Fest, which is what it's called this year, and it's pretty exciting to see so many seniors on our, in this campus property enjoying things that they've got going on. And I will say, with Elderfest taking place, note that those activities, most of the Elderfest activities are taking place inside and have taken place inside the center because it's pretty hot, and it gives the seniors that are participating an opportunity to cool down a bit. And I actually have to mention one thing with the All-Stars Day as I'm looking through. Yes, that has officially wrapped up at this point. So I just wanted to confirm that. And also, Alan, just quickly, we talk about how much effort the city, the homecoming committee, puts into making this event happen. By the way, we are very near the main stage in our setup on the center's property, so you may hear some mic checks going on. But I just wanted to talk just for a quick second to one of our wonderful WHFR staff members, volunteer staff members. Jumper is sitting next to me, and
hey.
If we can just get Jumper to say hi for a quick minute and kind of share why he's here. What makes this special, Jumper? How's it going?
It's been gone so long, it feels good to be back like we used to be. And WHFR got all the music you want, from rap, country, western, everything, jazz, all of it. We got it all. All right? And I'm the blues man on WHFR 89.3 every Wednesday, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Thank you so very much.
Oh, woohoo! That's our pro. You had Earl shouting in the background, jazz, jazz, because he's our jazz man also, of course, Thursday, late afternoons. And so we want to say thank you to both Jumper and Earl for being here, and so glad to have you. In addition, we want to say hi and special welcome to Tierra, who is on site for the first time. I think this is her first homecoming ever. Tierra has joined us in the telecommunication lab this summer and will be sticking with us, and so this is her chance to sort of acclimate. What are you feeling like so far, Tierra? How do you like this whole thing?
It's really exciting. It's definitely my first time here, and I'm excited to be here.
Great. Well, we're glad to have you. This is what makes homecoming special. It's seeing people that we haven't seen in a really long time, welcoming new faces, and really getting back into the roots of this community. Alan, how's it looking on your end with so many exciting events to talk about?
Well, there are a lot of very exciting events. And one of the things you mentioned, referring to Elderfest, and kind of a unique opportunity, given the location of the festival this year, is that some of those events are going to be indoors. Obviously, we're used to being at Ford Field, where rain, shine, flood, lightning, whatever happens, you're out there in the thick of it. So in this particular case, when it comes to Elderfest, there are things taking place because of this unique opportunity of space that the city owns, that's part of the city, where we have some things that are taking place indoors. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it really was one of the factors in making the decision to adopt this location as the new home for homecoming. Yes, it's a bit of a test experience, because you can plan it all on paper, but it's really, the proof is in, the weekend. But again, as I said, so far so good. And this is a rare and necessary aspect of giving some inside opportunity based on weather and so on. My understanding is, let's just say, should we get a downpour, everybody, they're not moving everything indoors, but there's a shelter there.
Right.
But in terms of, 90% of this event is outside, just as we know and love previous homecomings to be.
Well, okay, so let's run through getting there. Obviously, on radio, we can't show people pictures, but what
correct.
Is the general layout of the area? Where can we park? Where? How should we get there? From what you've seen.
Yeah, the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center is adjacent to the Dearborn Police Station. It's adjacent to the Henry Ford Centennial Library. It is located on Michigan Avenue, really just that would be west of Greenfield Road. It's north east of Southfield. And when you get to this vicinity, you're going to see signs, you're going to see police directing traffic, you're going to see all sorts of stuff. I think the biggest challenge that is going to be faced by people coming down this weekend will be coordinating the parking. Because it's new, we're sort of figuring out that process, and there is some handicap parking while it's still available at the field, actually at the main entrance of the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. But that is for handicap use only, and they tell me that it is going to fill up. So we have to be mindful of other opportunities for parking. You can park behind the library. There are some parking structures in the area. Those, as I understand, all typically have a $10 fee to park at some of those external parking areas. We would say just park in the back of the center. People might be thinking, I come to the center all the time. I work out
right,
there. Right. There's a huge parking lot back there. Well, this weekend, it's a carnival. It is no longer a parking lot, but it is a carnival show, and that's why we can't park on site. So I say let's take full advantage of the very active shuttle system that has been put in place. There is shuttle parking available at several areas in the community. The high schools are offering free shuttle service, so you can park at one of the area high schools, and shuttles are just continuously running throughout the entire day. It's free. It's easy. I promise you they will drop you off closer to the activities than if you parked nearby. So that's, I think, the main reason for using the shuttle system. And one other thing that I think is just wonderful, the city has created and arranged shuttle service for all of the senior centers in town. So if you live at a senior residence or a member of a senior center, there are shuttles to and from those locations as well. So shuttling is absolutely what we recommend. There are some, like stores and residences around. Certainly you don't want to park in driveways, but in terms of the stores, I think they're going to fill up fast. And I'm also told that Dearborn police are saying, don't park in a store parking lot, because then the people that are going to the store won't be able to park in the store parking lot. You know, so that's going to be a negative for the businesses. So we do not want, we're not recommending that anybody do that. So if you can get a spot at the library, the places behind the center, that would be south of the Performing Arts Center, at some of the structures, or shuttle is what we recommend.
Well, and I pulled that information up. I have it. I'm looking at it right now in terms of where those shuttle locations are. The shuttle parking is available basically from noon to midnight each day of the festival. That includes today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Dearborn High School is probably the one that's most accessible for a lot of people. The West DDA, Dearborn Downtown Association Park structure, that's at 2228 West Village Drive. I'm trying to remember, is that the parking structure that's over basically by Garrison, on Garrison, in the west side of Dearborn. There's also one at the Dearborn Fresh parking lot on Colson Street and Salina Elementary School on Fernie Street. There are also continuous shuttles going from the senior high-rise towers at Hubbard Manor, Kennedy Plaza, Townsend Towers, Hubbard Manor West, and the Sisson Manor. And certainly those are great opportunities for being able to get there. So, and then, of course, there's the handicap parking available for those certainly, who need it there on site. And then, obviously, paid parking at the Centennial Library, the Dearborn Administrative Center, and then Ghaffari Associates place there on Michigan Avenue, just east of Southfield. That opens at 6 o'clock. I'm assuming that's because we have fireworks coming up tonight and all of that stuff. So, yeah, we can get into the schedule if you want, or I know we might have a guest who's going to talk to us here on the program today.
Yeah, let's see if we can bring Nesreen over for a minute. Nesreen, are you with us? Come on over for a minute and bring one of your flyers. She has a lot of exciting things that she's talking to visitors about this weekend. Come on around. We're going to have her come inside the broadcast booth, and we'll let our new partner here from Henry Ford College, Transfer Bridges, which is the transfer agreements that are being cultivated between Henry Ford College for our students to transfer over seamlessly to U of M Ann Arbor. So Nesreen is no stranger to HFC, but she is she's got this new endeavor going and another opportunity to meet and connect with people that are excited about about being a part of Henry Ford College. Nesreen, full introduction, full name, title, all that fun stuff.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Nisreen Ezzedine. I am the grant coordinator for the Transfer Bridges to Humanities program, and I am a alumni of HFC as well as the Honors Program, and I also recently graduated from the University of Michigan. Yay! We are very happy to partner with so many of our fine universities around. What makes this one so special? What's this all about? So really what makes this special is there's often a stigma for community college students transferring to often very selective institutions. And so U of M, Ann Arbor, a lot of students often see it as a school that they can't go to, especially if they're going to community college for 2 years. And so really the program is guided to, one, make that accessible and people to see that they belong at U of M. And second, to save a lot of money this way. So you get really the best of both. You attend one of the best community colleges around and the best community. I'm going to qualify that. The best community college around. And then you also get to attend the number one public institution in the country. And so you get a lot of the small classes that HSC provides, but you also get a lot of the research opportunities, fellowship opportunities, and scholarship opportunities at both institutions. So even when you're a student at HFC, you also get those opportunities to meet students as well as professors and interact with faculty and administrators at the University of Michigan.
How does a potential student, a current student, somebody listening to us right now, how do they learn more and take the first step in crossing that bridge? Do you get what I said there?
Yes.
Crossing that bridge.
Crossing the bridge. All right. So the first step is getting on that bridge, and that is you go to hscc.edu/transfer-bridges, and on that you'll find a lot of information on the program as well as an opportunity to apply. And a part of that, there's also a link to the Honors Program because the HSC Honors Program has direct connections to the program as well. While you don't have to be an honors student, it does make things a lot more seamless if you are a part of the Honors Program.
Great. One more time, give us that contact information, and then tell us how long you guys are going to be here this weekend.
Sure. All right. So we're going to be here all 3 days, and so be sure to come and check us out on the booth. And so the website, again, is hscc.edu-transfer-bridges.
I'm asking Sierra to get a couple pictures of us here so we can validate that how hard you're already working this weekend.
I'm already sweating.
Oh, we're all sweating, honey. I tell you that. But we're so happy that you're here. Thank you. You've got a colleague over there. We're going to wave to him. Who do we have over there?
His name is
volunteer number one. How's that? I love it. Okay. Well, we're very grateful to have him here.
Dave, and I have yet to meet him. So
we'll keep up the great work. We'll see you on campus, I'm sure.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you taking some time. We put you on the spot. Thank you. Enjoy your weekend. Alan, that's what homecoming is. It's, again, meeting some new people, sharing information of what's happening in this community. HFC is very proud of the Transfer Bridges program and our Honors program and pretty much every program that we offer, including the Telecommunication Media Arts Program. And if you want to learn more about becoming a volunteer member of WHFR, here's my shameless plug. All you do is go to that website, WHFR.FM, and you can learn more. Maybe we'll have you sitting here at our sweating with us at the broadcast booth next year.
Well, I'm going to double down on the website thing and just say for more information about Dearborn Homecoming, their website is, of course, dearbornhomecoming.com. It's got the full schedule and the parking information. Obviously, we're just getting started, just kicked off just a little over an hour ago, and you'd think that after, 40-some years, that it would all be old hat, but this is a brand-new adventure here at the new location at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on Michigan Avenue. So that's the place to be. DearbornHomecoming.com is the website to get all of the information about parking, the schedule, and everything. Susan, are you still there? Nope. I think sitting here in the studio, we may have lost her real quickly, but we're going to bring her back. This is the WHFR Journal here on WHFR 89.3 FM, also online at WHFR.FM. We'll be back with more from Dearborn Homecoming in just a moment. However, as we always do here on the WHFR Journal, we have all sorts of timely and topical things to talk about. We're going to turn to some of our partners at the Public Radio Exchange to let us talk about, and I know we're already here in the first week of August, so we think summer is getting ready to end, and homecoming is usually kind of like one of those end of summer kind of concepts, but there's still time to read some good books. So let's explore this program here from the Public Radio Exchange, talking about your summer reading list, something that maybe some good suggestions for books. I know I've had plenty of time going through some of mine, so let's hear what we have to talk about here for recommendations for you to round out your summer in a literary sense here on the WHFR Journal.
Summer is officially here, and with it comes our annual With Good Reason summer reading list. We've got mothers and daughters.
I can feel the love that just pours through the book.
Spiritual seekers.
Anybody who wonders about the sacred, who asks, how can I be spiritual in this seemingly modern secular society, might want to pick up this book.
And so much in between. From Virginia Humanities, this is With Good Reason. I'm Sarah McConnell. Today, we're filling your bookshelves. Archana Pathak says she mainly reads from three categories: books related to her work, oldies she loves to reread, and new stuff written by people she cares about. Pathak is a professor at Virginia Commonwealth University, and she's here to recommend one book from each of her favorite categories. Archana, the first book you're recommending really isn't a new one at all. This is a speech that was actually written but never given back in 1936.
Yes, it is. The first book I'm recommending is Annihilation of Caste by B.R. Ambedkar. And it's a tough read because as a South Asian Hindu American of the Savarna castes, of the higher castes, it forces me to really examine my own caste privilege and think about the ways in which that has shaped my politic as a Hindu, as an Indian woman, as a brown person in the United States.
This man was supposed to deliver this speech at a conference of the Society for the Breakup of the Caste System, but it was considered too inflammatory to be delivered even to that group.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that, you know, Ambedkar had a vision for India that was so intertwined with both the eradication of colonialism, but understanding that the eradication of colonialism wasn't the only root of oppressive violence in that society. And so he had a vision that explored and examined the ways in which Indian society itself was organized around an oppressive system, that of the caste system. And he was quite vocal about an imagining of India and a critique of India that shook up even the most liberal of its population. And I think part of it was complicated because Gandhi, who was also working so hard towards the eradication of colonialism, was leaning into the Hindu tenets as ways of enforcing revolution and resistance, right? So Ambedkar coming in and saying that very doctrine itself has its own poison, that shook the society up.
So Ambedkar was actually criticizing Hinduism itself, which was just a bridge too far for many.
There's really no way to separate out caste from Hinduism, and we have to think about that. Caste has been used as a structure of oppressive violence in India. And sure, I can say, and I do say, not my Hinduism. As soon as we start doing that, we got to start looking at how that liberal bent is blinding us to the fact that a lot of systems, there is no system that I can think of that hasn't been weaponized for violence, right? If I just accept it blindly, then I'm complicit in its violence.
And Gandhi noted that while the elimination of the caste system is the best way forward, he defended Hinduism and he said, you know, let's not look at religions by their worst adherents. Let's look at all the world's religions by their most and best adherents, right?
You know, and this is the thing, like, you know, I was raised in a family of freedom fighters. Right? Both my grandfathers met and fought with Gandhiji. My sense of social justice in the United States is rooted in the trainings of Satyagraha. Like, that's what I read to learn how to be a justice warrior in the U.S., right? So this book makes me grapple. I would like to say that we could take the worst of a religion and put it off in a little box and tie it up and put it away. But while it's still in play, I don't think we can. What I realized was that I am a more faithful Hindu because of my ability to grapple with and read Ambedkar. He helps me see why I do and don't choose my religious tenets. So if I can read about my spiritual journey from its most violent place and figure out how I live in it, then there's a solidity to that.
Another book that you're recommending is a novel, and this one is set in Oakland, California. Tell me about that.
Yes. This is Mistress of Spices by Chitra Banerjee Divakaruni. And I love all of Divakaruni's work. She's a brilliant writer, but Mistress of Spices holds a special place in my heart. It is one of the most sensual novels I've ever read. Like, I experience it with all five of my senses. It's the story about a woman who runs a spice shop in Oakland, California. And without giving too much away, many members of the South Asian diasporic community come to her spice shop. And while they shop for the spices they need to do their cooking, they also share their lives with her. And just the description of the spices, the explanation of the scents and the sounds and the tastes. And it just transports me back to so many family kitchens when we cooked and ate together.
And there's so much mysticism and magic also involved, where she is using spices individually to touch and heal a variety of people who come in.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's most poignant for me about that book is I didn't know it at the time, but I now realize it. My family used spices as ways to heal me as a child who walked in multiple worlds. It may not always have felt that way to me as a kid, because it was just confusing. And like, am I Indian? Am I American? You know, I came to this country in the early 1970s. The South Asian population wasn't as strong or as visible at the time. And so I felt very alone. But there were ways in which the smells and the touches and the tastes and the scents and all of that did envelop me. So at least when I came home, that was steady and clear and consistent. I think we all have to get to adulthood to realize how much those experiences of our childhood saved us.
What do you mean, my parents used spices? Do you mean that because they cooked with traditional spices and that was always the backdrop of family meals, that enveloped me in my culture? Or do you mean they were deliberately using certain spices to evoke something in you?
Both and, right? So we definitely cooked with traditional foods, you know, cooked traditional foods with traditional spices, but we used spices in the ways that they are used in traditional, like Ayurvedic, for example, techniques. So like, everyone is all about they're golden milk lattes these days, but I've been drinking golden milk lattes since I was a kid, right? That's actually a pretty ancient remedy for coughs and sore throats. And so, you know, if we said that we had a cough or our throat hurt, then my mom made us haldi milk. Haldi is turmeric. And, you know, maybe didn't love the taste of it, but was a saucer full, and it was like, well, drink it down while it's, you know, while it's hot, and then just go to bed, you'll feel better. Or if it was hot outside, you know, remembering my parents using a particular kind of metal bowl with ghee on it and rubbing the soles of my feet to pull the heat down, to cool my body off, right? Like, we lived that life.
What is the last book that you want to share with us?
That's a great question. I've got to pick one, huh? It's hard. Reading has been my escape my whole life. I'm always reading a lot of books at once. So there's two that I'm like smack dab in the middle of. One is Julieta Singh's The Breaks, Julieta Singh is a local Richmond author, and the book "The Breaks" is a letter to her child, and I mean, I think it's exquisite for any mother and child to read that book, but it's just even more poignant because I can hear her voice and see their faces. And it grapples with this question of being brown and finding our ways through the world. It's maybe a letter I wish an adult had written for me as a young brown child in this country, trying to figure out what that meant.
What does she say to her daughter?
So much. So much, right? She talks about helping her daughter find her way in the midst of a backdrop of a society that is always going to try and pigeonhole her. I can feel the love that just pours through the book. I think that's what's so incredible for me. I think she's showing her child the utter strength and beauty of vulnerability. You know, don't let the world steal that from you.
Any guilty pleasures also on your night table?
So look, since I was a kid, it's been pretty much anything by Nora Roberts. And she writes in trilogies, which I love. So it's like you get to know these characters and they hang out for like three books. So there's like a good relationship soap opera investment for me. I get to know these characters and kind of fall for them. And her books are very familial and relational. So she has these big, beautiful families with all these like intergenerational complexities, and everyone loves each other a lot. And it's just really feel good. It is really my kind of like, you know, Lifetime or Hallmark kind of channel version of book reading.
Actually, I've never read Nora Roberts, and I think I might just give it a shot. Archana Pathak, thank you for sharing your book interests with me on With Good Reason.
Thank you so much for asking me. It's wonderful to be able to talk about the joy that books bring me and to share with you some of my personal favorites.
Archana Pathak is a professor of gender, sexuality, and women's studies at Virginia Commonwealth University. In 1970, the Coretta Scott King Award joined the Caldecott and Newbery Medals as one of the greatest honors given to children's and young adult books. Each year, the award recognizes outstanding books that reflect the African-American experience. Rosalie Kaya is a professor of English at Norfolk State University. She's worked with the Coretta Scott King Award and shares some of her favorite past winners.
Oh, wow. You know, I like all of these books. I really do. There's a book by Clara Hartfield, and the title of that book is A Few Red Drops. This was awarded the Coretta Scott King Book Award in 2019.
What age group is that for?
This one I would do for YA. So this book, A Few Red Drops, is about the Chicago race riots of 1919.
You know, in the 1919 Chicago race riot, 38 people died, more than 500 were wounded, two-thirds of the casualties were Black, a third were white, and this was touched off by the stoning death of one young Black man who was rafting with friends on the so-called Black part of the beach nearby when they drifted onto the so-called white part of the beach. Would you tell me about that beach and that young man?
Well, I did my doctorate at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. This part of the country where this happened, where the little boy was stoned, that was up around Lake Michigan. And as you said, he and a few of his friends drifted off into the white section of the beach. And they were attacked by a mob of white men. And, of course, when the surviving little boys got back to their home, to their community, and they talked about it, and that's when everything just went crazy, went wild. The author, Clara Hartfield, does extensive research. This book is, as we say in the vernacular, the bomb. She right. She has illustrations. She has a picture of the mayor of that city where this happened. It's just an awesome, awesome book. As you can see, I'm just into it. I love it. I use it in my class. And the students, get really wrapped up in it because people don't know why this a stone throw would ration off something like this.
There's another popular book that won the Coretta Scott King Award fairly recently called The Watsons Go to Birmingham. That was roughly based on an historical incident, but it's a fictionalized account of it. Tell me why you love this book.
I love that book because I love the author. The reason I like his writing is because it's light, but it's heavy.
Right.
In other words, he has humor there, but he gets to the point. And the protagonists in The Watsons Go to Birmingham, as you said, it's based on, but it's not about the Birmingham March and that kind of thing. The protagonist is a preteen, I guess, going on teenage. And he's a little bit much for his family in terms of his behavior. So they feel that the way we can calm him down is send him, as we say in the vernacular, down the country. So when you live up north and you send somebody down the country to your grandma, that means that, you know, when you come back, you're going to be all right. And so they take this trip down the country, a car trip down the country. And as they're moving further from up north to down the country, they begin to see how things change, how they can't stop and have a meal, how they can't eat at a certain place, where they can't use the toilets at a certain place. And so when they actually get to grandma's house, this is when things begin to start. And you can kind of like see this teenage boy coming to his thing, you know, where he was a big shot when he was at up north. And now he's seeing how, you know, you have your place and you must be aware that this is your place. And it's sad that you have to have your place,
right.
You know. That is just so sad. And the gist of the story is that his whole behavior has changed by spending that summer in Birmingham. So what Christopher Paul Curtis does is to put some sprinklings of the Birmingham movement in the book, but it is not about the movement.
We have time for one last recommendation by you, and I know that you wanted to bring up for younger readers a book written by a friend of mine, Margot Lee Shetterly.
I love it. I love it.
And this is the book that she wrote for young people after
yes.
she wrote her adult book, Hidden Figures.
Yes.
So this one is like for ages 4 through 8. And this is a well documented book as well as, you know, for children. I think she did a wonderful job. Young children, especially young little girls, need to know that they matter and that they can do things. And
yeah.
and we need to start at that point. These four women helped NASA launch into the future. And maybe little girls didn't know anything about this. It's an awesome read, and I would certainly put this at top of one of my list as well.
And before I let you go, what are you reading right now?
Oh, well, now I'm reading the 1619 Project.
Right?
Yes. And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And it's just a mixture. It's not just about that. There's poetry. There are, of course, essays. 1619 Project. Love, love, love.
Rosalie Kaya, thank you for talking with me on With Good Reason.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
Rosalie Kaya is a professor of English at Norfolk State University. Our next guest brings us four books about cross-cultural identity and religion in America. Kyle Garten-Gundling is a professor of English at Christopher Newport University.
The first one that I think we can talk about is a book called American Dervish by Iyad Akhtar. It's one of my personal favorites that I've read in probably the last 5 years.
And tell me about Ayad Akhtar. Who's he, the author?
So Ayad Akhtar is primarily known as a playwright. He wrote a play called Disgraced that was very successful a few years ago. American Dervish is his first novel. So there was a lot of people wondering, how is he going to do with his fiction debut? Let me tell you, he knocks it out of the park. This is a wonderful novel. It's an intimate portrait of a young immigrant from Pakistan whose family lives in a Milwaukee suburb in the 1990s. And I find it to be a very moving coming-of-age story about him trying to discover his place in the world, his relation to his family, his culture, and his faith. So anybody who wonders about the sacred, who asks, how can I be spiritual in this seemingly modern secular society, might want to pick up this book. It's a really fascinating reflection that has both culturally specific and, I think, transcultural resonances.
And it strikes me that it's such an easy glimpse into yet another community trying to make it in America and dealing with how does my culture fit in.
That's right. And in this book, I think we see a lot of assimilation going on where the main character's parents are very secularized. They're in the health professions and religion is not a big part of their lives. It's actually through when the main character's mother has a friend who moves in with them. She is a Sufi Muslim who then becomes a kind of mentor figure to the main character, teaches him about the Quran, about the history of Muslim doctrine, and really gets him interested in the faith. And so it's actually outside the nuclear family that that spiritual influence comes in. The intertwining of faith and family relations is a very key aspect of this.
I wonder if there are any passages that you particularly like that you might want to share with us to give us a feel for this writer.
Sure. So there's a passage early on in the book where Hayat, the main character, is just starting to read Mina's copy of the Quran. So here we go. Here's the quote. The book's new binding cracked as I opened it. Inside, each page was like a work of art, covered on the left with a block of black Arabic text enclosed in a golden frame. On the right was the English translation. As I turned the thick pages, heavy like vellum, they released the crisp, pleasing odor of new paper. I looked down at the page. In the lamplight, the black letters pulsed against the yellow-white page. So in this passage, Hyde is completely overcome with the beauty of the Quran, not because of the substance of its words, but because of the majesty of the physical presence of the book. And whether we're talking about a sacred text or not, I think that there may be some relatable aspect to this passage about just what it feels like to sit down with a really good book in your hands, to smell that pleasing book odor. All these physical experiences that I think have been kind of on the decline nowadays, with the rise of electronic reading, I think this book is a very valuable way of kind of recovering some of those experiences. And that's one of the things that really exemplifies the kind of the beauty of the writing and also the relatability of the love of literature more broadly.
You're also recommending a lighter read that is a detective series about a former Buddhist monk who becomes a police officer in Los Angeles and then a sort of Sherlock Holmes detective there. Tell me about this book. What's the name?
That's right. So this book is called The First Rule of 10. And in this case, 10 isn't just a number. It's actually the main character's nickname. So the main character is named Tenzing Norbu. And it's a 5-book series. In each book, he kind of comes up with these rules for himself where he has these intuitions that he disregards at the beginning of the book, and then it gets him into trouble. And then by the end of the book, he comes away with some kind of life lesson. And so in this case, the first rule of 10 turns out to be something along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, if you have a hunch that something doesn't feel right, don't ignore the hunch. You should acknowledge and investigate before something goes wrong later. To get to that lesson, he goes through a really sprawling plot that involves so many different things. It involves mysterious poisonings. It involves trees being gradually killed. It involves a kind of intellectual property con job where there's a shady lawyer who tries to convince old artists to sue record companies for more royalty money. And there's an Italian gangster. There's an Irish gangster. gangster. It gets a bit stereotypical, which I object to, but there's a lot of different kind of traditionally detective plot elements in the book that end up getting reworked through this kind of Buddhist perspective, because the main character is a former Buddhist monk and he uses Buddhist meditation to help him think and help him solve his crimes.
You actually study Buddhism, or you have. Do you think he gets it right in this series, the author?
So that's a very tough question. I think for the most part, he does. It's a co-authored team, and the authors are not Tibetans themselves, but they've clearly done a lot of study of Buddhism. They've clearly consulted with a lot of people. They want to represent this character with dignity. They want to represent his religion fairly. I think that the details about Tibetan philosophy and Tibetan art, they get pretty well. If there is one way that you might quibble with them, I just think it's the sheer fact that they use Tibetan Buddhism as a bit of a gimmick in the book, and the main character has some minor telepathic powers that he uses from time to time. So it's almost like turning him into a kind of minor Tibetanish superhero, which is a little bit weird and kind of stereotyping. So that's, I think, what the main complaint would be. But they do try to represent the religion well, and they end up working it into a fairly good suspenseful mystery plot.
You've also got some nonfiction works that you are interested in. What are the nonfiction books that you'd like to share as summer reading?
So one of them is a book called So You Want to Talk About Race by Ijoma Oluo. This is a book that kind of takes a conversational approach, as the title would indicate, to talking about racial issues in the United States. And the reason that I wanted to highlight this book is that it came out in 2018, during a time when the Black Lives Matter movement was growing, was becoming more recognizable, and it was a very successful book at the time. But then a couple years later in 2020, when things really blew up in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd, I think this book got somewhat overshadowed by some other books like The 1619 Project and How to Be an Anti-Racist and White Fragility. And those are great books too. But I think what is really noteworthy about Oluo's book, So You Want to Talk About Race, is that it takes a lot of pretty sophisticated concepts and makes them very clear and easy to understand, taking a conversational approach to walk the reader through these various racially fraught topics. And then, speaking of having conversations about difficult topics, the other nonfiction book that I'm especially interested in is called Talking Across the Divide, How to Communicate with People You Disagree With, and Maybe Even Change the World. And the author of that book is Justin Lee. Now, Justin Lee is a gay Christian whose career has been spent trying to persuade more anti-gay Christians to change their mind and be more LGBTQ plus inclusive in their theology and in their practices. But based on that specific issue, he wants to kind of draw broader lessons for his readers on how to talk to people you disagree with, how to have conversations about difficult issues while remaining respectful, how to forge relationships with people, and how to figure out what is it that you want to accomplish in these conversations. Do you want the person that you're talking to do something specific, to think something specific? And how can you kind of overcome some of the more common barriers that people have to opening up their minds to different ideas?
These couldn't come at a better time for us. Great summer reading choices. Kyle, thank you so much for sharing your books with me on With Good Reason.
Thank you very much.
Kyle Garden Gundling is a professor of English at Christopher Newport University. There's a complete list of today's book recommendations on our website at withgoodreasonradio.org. Support for With Good Reason is provided by the University of Virginia Health System, pioneering treatments to save lives and preserve brain function for stroke patients, uvahealth.com. With Good Reason is produced by Virginia Humanities, which acknowledges the Monacan Nation, the original people of the land and waters of our home in Charlottesville, Virginia. Our production team is Allison Quantz, Matt Darrow, Lauren Francis, and Jamal Milner. Cassandra Deering and Aviva Costo are our interns. Special thanks this week to Jenny Taylor and Jordan Pfeiffer for the podcast. Go to withgoodreasonradio.org. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.
This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. It's Dearborn Homecoming Week. That was actually a really great show to listen to. Susan, I don't know, assuming number one that you're there, what has your summer reading been like?
My summer reading has been very light, except for a couple of new editions of textbooks that I'm adapting for some classes. So I was doing pretty heavy work-related intellectual reading, but for pleasure, not so much.
Ah, fair enough. All right. Yeah, I've done a little bit of pleasure reading, and actually one that kind of relates to one of the classes I teach. My two books I've read this summer. One was a memoir from a guitarist, Will Sargent, from the band Echo and the Bunnymen from the 1980s. He did a memoir. It's out on Third Man Press. Jack White's imprint there. And then the other one is a book called Bad City, which was written by an investigative reporter from the Los Angeles Times about his trials and tribulations trying to uncover a very, very important story that a lot of people in high power did not want to have uncovered. So anyway, that's been my summer reading.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, indeed. So anyway, let's go back here, because I know it's the WHFR Journal, but we're broadcasting live, at least Susan is, from the Dearborn Homecoming, which obviously kicked off just a couple hours ago. How are things going there?
Things are going well. The sun is out. It is a warm day, but it's August in Michigan, and so what else should we expect? It's wonderful. Lots of happy people walking around. We have our great police and fire members here making sure everything is safe and running smoothly, which it is. I know it's going to get pretty crowded probably as the day wears on, and most especially as the weekend rolls on. We've got fireworks taking place Saturday night and Sunday night, as is the tradition, kicking off around 10 p.m. both of those nights. So not tonight, but we do have some pretty cool music. A Jimmy Buffett tribute called Bluff It, which is kind of fun, at 6 o'clock. And then at 8:30 tonight, it's the Killer Flamingos on the main stage, and they're quite a party group. So plenty of live entertainment, plenty of nice people, nonprofit organizations to come and talk to. I think later, I'm sure later, we will talk with a representative of the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter. Their booth is about four over, and I've already made a friend there. So we're going to have them over later, talk a little bit about what they're doing, great things as they're continuing contribution to the happiness of our pets in Dearborn. And then the other thing I just want to mention, special hello to Mary Landrosh from the city of Dearborn. She is working at the VIP area. It's new this year. It's an opportunity to you pay a little something, and then there's a little extra section for you kind of off to the side, and dignitaries and so on. But so hi to Mary. We're so glad that she's here working with this event again this year. And also another Mary, Mary Petlichkoff, who is one of our esteemed Henry Ford College Board of Trustee members. Mary is a huge supporter of the Homecoming Festival, but even bigger, if I can say that, supporter of Henry Ford College. And we are certainly grateful for everything our Board of Trustees does to help us stay active, vibrant, on the air, sounding better than ever, I might say, on this Friday, August 5th, 2022. So if you're listening to us on 89.3 FM, make sure that you know and understand and thank, any chance you get, the Henry Ford College Board of Trustees. It was great to see Mary, both Marys, this afternoon at the event.
Well, the Dearborn Homecoming started a couple of hours ago. It runs until 11 o'clock tonight, and then from noon until 11 tomorrow and Sunday as well. And just when you think you know what Dearborn Homecoming is all about, well, no, it's a little bit different this year. It's not the homecoming that, those of us who've spent a lot of time in Dearborn over the years have ever experienced. It's at a new location. We want to make sure that you're aware of that. The 41st Homecoming Festival taking place after a couple of years off at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center there on Michigan Avenue, just west of Greenfield. And then, of course, even though the location has changed, A lot of the things that you're used to in Dearborn Homecoming still exist, such as the carnival. There's the obviously the musical performances. We'll have fireworks tomorrow and Sunday evening. We'll have booths for the nonprofits. We'll also have the class reunion tents. All of those other things that we've known to love and enjoy about homecoming over the years still exist, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time until you go and check out the food vendors as well, right?
you know I'm on my way. The Polish tent and I were very good friends.
Well, I was going to say with that Jimmy Buffett band, let me know if there's a vegan cheeseburger in paradise available. So yeah.
Oh, you take all the fun out of it, yeah. Alan. No, I'm kidding. You know, one last thing I want to mention before we sign off from the field. New this year, I'm told, and I haven't seen it yet. Maybe Pierre already saw it. The world's biggest bounce house is here. If you wondered where that was, well, it's here at the Dearborn Homecoming Festival.
Well, that's got to be a pretty big bounce house. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Apparently, the world. Tiara, did you see it? And did it look like the world's biggest to you? She's confirming. In fact, it is the world's biggest bounce house, right here at Homecoming.
All right, there you go. Live music on the main stage, which is not far from where the WHFR booth is. If you want to go and meet us live on location there at Dearborn Homecoming, live music starts at 4 o'clock with Band J, and then Bluff It, the tribute to Jimmy Buffett, tonight at 6 o'clock, and the Killer Flamingos at 8:30. And then, of course, there'll be bands tomorrow and Sunday as well. More information at DearbornHomecoming.com. So hopefully it's going to be a great weekend. And I don't know if I'm ready for the bounce house or not.
I can tell you I assuredly am not, but that's okay. I know my limits. But I will say, if you're driving down Michigan Avenue right now and you're approaching Greenfield or coming from Greenfield on Michigan, feel free to beep your horn. We will hear you here at the WHFR tent. So to our listeners that are enjoying listening on 89.3 FM, anytime you're in the area and you're on your way, give us a shout.